Hello, everyone. This is The Takeaway. I'm Arun Venugopal in for Tanzina Vega for today and tomorrow. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday. And we're going to start with a story that could have major implications for the 2020 election. On Monday, Vice Chairman of the Federal Election Commission, Matthew Peterson, announced his resignation. You might remember seeing Peterson in the news a couple years ago, struggling to answer basic legal questions for a federal judicial nomination that he ultimately did not get.
Have you ever tried a jury trial?
I have not.
Civil?
No.
Criminal?
No.
Bench?
No.
State or federal court?
I have not.
But Peterson's departure from the FEC is a big deal. Why? Because it leaves the already short staff panel now one vote short of the minimum number of commissioners required to make decisions about the nation's campaign finance laws. In other words, the FEC is effectively shut down, something that hasn't happened in more than 10 years. And this comes at a time when there are growing concerns about the integrity and infrastructure of our elections. So let's talk about it. To help us unpack the ongoing turmoil, we're joined by the Democratic chair of the Federal Election Commission, Ellen Weintraub. Chair Weintraub, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So how is this vacancy going to affect your work at the FEC?
Well, first of all, I want to clarify something. We are not shutting down. The agency has a great staff of dedicated public servants who will continue to come to work every day and make sure that the agency fulfills its core mission of following the money and making sure that the American people are informed about who is supporting which candidates and how the candidates are spending their money. However, there obviously are severe implications for the agency's functioning when we don't have a quorum of commissioners to do the commission's business. So we will not be able to issue advisory opinions, issue new rules, or very significantly issue any decisions on enforcement matters. Any investigations that are currently ongoing will continue, but we won't be able to conclude them because the conclusion requires a decision by at least four commissioners. So we're going to get backed up pretty quickly on our enforcement docket. The good news is that the president and Congress can fix this problem, the Senate in particular. If the president nominates new commissioners and the Senate quickly confirms them, we can get back to business and with minimal interference in our mission.
So if you could give us a primer on the FEC, what exactly are the responsibilities of FEC members?
Well, the agency was set up after Watergate, as I said, with a core mission of disclosure, of making sure that the American people know who is supporting which candidates, who the candidates may be in debt to or might have conflicts of interest about. It's informative to the voters to know, well, if this group is supporting a particular candidate, then depending on how I feel about that group's issues, that might influence whether I want to support that candidate or not. So the committees, all of the political committees, candidates, party committees, outside spending groups have to file reports with the commission that detail how much money they are raising, who they are raising that money from, and how the money is being spent. We also have this important enforcement role. So there are rules on who you can take money from. Right now, one of the important rules that I'm very concerned about is the law against accepting any kind of foreign assistance in an election. We have seen in the 2016 election that the Russians in particular were interested in intervening in our election, and we need to have the cop on the beat to make sure that any complaints about that are very quickly addressed in the 2020 election.
Last time you were on The Takeaway, you talked to Amy Walter about the FEC's challenges in coming to a consensus, even when you did have enough members to work. Is the FEC fundamentally dysfunctional?
Well, we do have our challenges, and I want to say that it hasn't always been that way. When I first started on the commission, commissioners on both sides of the aisle shared the goal of making the commission work. And that meant compromise, and that meant reaching across the aisle, and that meant trying to find rules and guidance that four commissioners could agree on, even if no one might think that it was perfect. at least we could find a consensus, make some compromises, and get clear guidance out to the American public and the political actors who are obviously there in real time trying to make decisions about how to comply with the law. And we need to be clear about where the lines are and where the rules are. There has been, in the last 10 or 11 years, a real decline in that kind of collegiality and working across the aisles to find a four-vote consensus. And what I have seen from some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle is, since they are very skeptical of campaign finance regulation to begin with, they figured out that if they just vote together all the time and vote no, then they can block any action that they want to without trying to achieve consensus. It reflects the greater polarization in Washington in general. I don't think it is a positive trend. I don't think it well serves the American people. And I would hope that new commissioners who come on board would come on board with a real commitment to working together.
Now, two other spots on the commission have remained vacant for the last 2 years. What's been the holdup there?
Well, this is not something that anybody is consulting me about. And the nominations have to be made by the president, and they have to be confirmed by the Senate. I don't know why there have not been nominations to fill the two-year vacancy on the Democratic side. There has been a nomination on the Republican side, although it's a little unclear which whether that was to fill the vacant seat or to fill Commissioner Peterson's seat. So why that those nominations haven't happened, why there haven't been hearings or confirmation in the Senate, I can't tell you that. That's not for me to decide. I can only urge the president and the Senate to take quick action now. Obviously, if we didn't have these two longstanding vacancies, we would not be in this bind today.
I've been speaking with FEC Chair Ellen Weintraub, and we're going to come back to her in a moment, but I want to bring in Chris Bing, a cybersecurity reporter at Reuters. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You reported on Monday that the U.S. government is increasingly concerned about how cyber attacks like ransomware could disrupt the 2020 election. How real is this threat?
That's right. I think it's quite real. What we've seen just over the last 2 years is that cities and counties have been victims of these ransomware-style attacks. And for those who aren't familiar with what this is a type of computer virus largely associated with criminals that will lock up a computer, make it inaccessible to the user, unless they send a cryptocurrency payment back to the hacker. Now, this can be very disruptive, though, because whoever owns that computer can't access it. And in the case of cities and counties, they may have very important services for their constituencies that they need to use those computers for, be it taxes or something else. The concern here, obviously, is with voter registration databases, which are critical in the election process.
So in these incidents involving states and municipalities, how often do they actually pay these ransoms to resolve the problem?
You know, there's not a lot of transparency in understanding how often they pay the ransom. The cases that are publicly known, those cities and counties worked pretty closely with law enforcement. And so the understanding is that they did not pay the ransoms, but rather they worked with individuals from the FBI and from the government to try and regain access. But while they were trying, obviously, they couldn't access those computers. So there was a backlog of work and all their systems were disrupted.
So looking forward to the 2020 election, what is the nature of the attacks that experts are worried about?
Ransomware is really something that is not theoretical. It's something that the government is already seeing spread across the country. And if this type of virus were used against voter registration databases and the election systems, it could have real impact. There's only one day that you can vote, or there's one major day that people are voting, I should say. And if you had a large cyber attack that were to disrupt those systems, it could cause people to not be able to vote, delays in voting. States are going to have to come up with a difficult decision of whether they should pay that ransom to regain access as quickly as possible. And at a large enough scale, it could really potentially compromise voting results.
And these attacks have brought cities like Baltimore and Atlanta to a stop. Are these threats mostly domestic? Are they foreign? Both?
That's a really good question. Ransomware has been popular, I'd say, really over the last 5 years. And although it's typically considered to be something that criminals do for financial gain. What we've seen over the last 2 years is foreign governments also use it, primarily Russia and North Korea, where they used ransomware as a means for another goal. So they used ransomware, for example, in Ukraine in an incident that's known as NotPetya to damage Ukrainian companies. And the virus would ask the victim to pay for regaining access, but in fact, it didn't regain access at all. It was just deleting the data underneath it. So we're coming into this election now with the understanding that foreign intelligence agencies view ransomware as a means of destruction and disruption against their victims.
Ellen, if you could weigh in now, I'm curious, what role does the Federal Election Commission play in countering attacks on our election infrastructure?
Well, not much of a role, frankly, not the kind of attacks that you're talking about. The elections are administered at the state and local level, so it is going to be on state and local officials to make sure that they are protected against cyber attacks. And I know that the Department of Homeland Security has been working with state and local governments on this. There are also bills in Congress to provide greater resources to state and local officials in this important job. They are those bills are tied up in Congress right now and can't get a vote in the Senate in particular. So I would urge all members of Congress, this ought to be an area of bipartisan concern and bipartisan consensus. I would urge Congress to adopt both the bills that would provide these greater resources and cybersecurity tools to the folks on the ground who are going to be working with these databases and trying to protect them, as well as adopting greater there are also bills to provide strong sanctions against any foreign actor who would seek to employ any kind of cybersecurity weapons against the United States and its democracy. And I think that we really need to take a stronger stand and ensure that foreign actors who would seek to do us harm know that there will be serious consequences. So, as I said, there are bipartisan bills in Congress, and I urge Congress to adopt them quickly and the president to sign them.
Ellen Weintraub is chair of the Federal Election Commission, and Chris Bing is a cybersecurity reporter at Reuters. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.